This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. On today's program, a remix of two shows from the archives featuring a couple of iconic bands from the Crescent City of New Orleans. Later in the program, we'll check in with my 2013 visit with the Dirty Dozen Brass Band. But first off, we'll get reacquainted with Galactic. Hello and welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to be joined by Stanton Moore and Ben Elman from the band Galactic.
Hello, how's it going, John?
Good to talk with you guys. We are speaking to them backstage in the Wilma Theater in Missoula, and it is late February 2010 as they're touring across the West. We were just talking just a second ago. You were in Aspen most recently.
Yeah, it was nice. It was a little treacherous with all the snow. We made it through all the passes, and we got there. There was questionable the entire time, and then we got stuck two blocks from the venue at a stop sign, and then the bus just couldn't get any traction.
So, and this was in Aspen?
Yeah. So we made it all the way two blocks away, and then the bus couldn't move, and we had to have a tow truck come and just give us a little jolt so we could get out. But it was pretty funny.
Now, of course, a lot of listeners know this, but the band hails from the New Orleans area, so obviously the winter weather a little bit different than the climate you're used to.
Yes, but luckily our bus driver right now is very experienced driving in the snow, and he's a great driver. And
he was white-knuckling it for a few hours there. He's, you know, he's got a great motto, which is arrive alive.
I like that motto.
Yeah, me too, man.
Well, the most recent recording from the band is Yakame. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes.
Now, let's start with the term itself. For those of us here in the Mountain West who might not be familiar with that term, tell us a little bit about what that term means.
Well, It's really nothing. It's actually inspired by the name of a very regional soup that we have down there called Yaca Maine. But like a lot of things in New Orleans, everyone pronounces it differently. So people call it Yaca May, Yaca Meat, Yaca Mean, all sorts of different ways. You hear it pronounced so many different ways. But for us, it was inspired by the name of that soup. But to me, it really kind of it just had the sort of a sound of a lot of vernacular of New Orleans, you know, like gumbo yaya, look a pie pie, and hunane, and these sort of like Indian chants and
Giacomo Finane,
yeah,
the bon ton roulé, all these different things that end in a.
So in the end, it represents to me, part of the sort of narrative of our record, which is sort of connecting the sort of, it's another way, rather than saying a gumbo of musical styles, which is very overplayed. Way to describe music in New Orleans. It sort of represents this concept of our record of having a lot of different guest musicians from New Orleans that come from different parts of musical backgrounds and different parts of the city and different styles, and sort of bringing them all together into our fold.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the recording itself and how it came together and how you brought all these different flavors into the band's mix.
Well, yeah, we were fortunate to collaborate on this project with a lot of great musicians from New Orleans, some really famous ones and some people you've probably never heard of, but all people who are doing really interesting music in New Orleans. So we were, just fortunate to collaborate with some of them, and it sort of crosses the board of a lot of different things that are going on in New Orleans. We have Alan Toussaint and Irma Thomas on the record, and Walter Wolfman Washington, but then we also have some of these rappers that representing this very regional style of hip-hop in New Orleans called bounce music.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. So, you know, we got these, and they're rappers doing bounce music, and then we have even these people that represent a sort of subset of that are gay rappers, and they call themselves sissy rappers. And it's a lot of interesting music going on in New Orleans, and we just kind of tapped into a lot of that and collaborated, you know?
Yeah. So it's almost like a night out on the town, you know, as hosted by us, you know, so we're going to bring you, of course, you know, if you were our guest in New Orleans, we'd bring you, of course, to hear Alan Toussaint and Irma Thomas. And you got to check out these sissy rappers over here. And now you got to come see the Morning 40 Federation. Now you got to come here, you know, Trombone Shorty. And a lot of times you can see a lot of this just on Frenchman Street, you know, and that's the way we all grew up on the scene down there, you know, experiencing all these different things and really kind of falling in love with that kind of experience, you know, of being able to hear a little bit of this, hear a little bit of that. And then, you know, in the end, you're energized and inspired by that, you know, and it's not just one particular genre. It's the energy of the whole scene, the energy of that whole experience, you know.
Out the way of the devil.
This is John Floridus, and you're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm joined today by Ben Elman and Stanton Moore of the band Galactic. I wanted to ask you about, we've been talking about the most recent album, Yakame, and it seems like, from what I can tell, there's a more conscious effort maybe in the last couple albums to have the studio versions of these tunes a little more, I don't want to say concise, but a little more compact maybe. Is that accurate? And then to, I guess, maybe differentiating between the studio versions and the live versions.
Absolutely. I think that we have, we're just living in an era too where so many people such as ourselves, we have our own studio in New Orleans, so we have a project studio, so it's real different in the process of making a record or making a product these days, I think, is from what it used to be. It used to be a lot more under the gun with money and time spent doing it, and we self-produce our records and we have our own studio, so we have a lot of time to experiment, and we definitely look at making a CD as a separate experience from going to see the live show. And these days, it's kind of the way we write a lot is in the studio. I think we used to kind of do that as well. You know, we would record our shows, and you'd listen to certain moments and go, "Oh, well, that sounds really cool. Maybe we can make a song out of that." But it's sort of a different process these days, having your own studio, making music that way, and so. It's been fascinating for me, particularly to the concept of having all this time and making our own music, because you could really look at it as a completely separate art form of, in terms of music making, you know. And it's like to go back to the metaphor of at least a picture or painting a picture. It's sort of a similar thing, you know. It's a different process at least, but it's been exciting for us over the last couple records, having our own studio, being able to experiment. And I think it makes the music different, and it has become the way that we write these days, really. So, and of course, that always changes when we play live, you know.
Sure,
so we get the song going, and then we got to play it live, and it'll evolve, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've just gotten more comfortable in the last several years of looking at it as two different mediums, you know. It's two different things that we can show our music in, you know. The studio, we've kind of, you know, with Ben's egging on, we've kind of thrown out the idea of how are we going to replicate this live. Like, when we're making things in the studio, we Ben's always like, "It doesn't matter, you know, we'll figure it out, you know, just come on, let's just get adventurous with this stuff, you know." So to Ben's credit, he's always kind of, you know, prodding us in that direction. And with this record, you know, we really just threw out the notion of how we're going to do this live. Like, you know, we knew that we had all these different vocalists, and what are we going to do this stuff live? And so we'll figure it out when the time comes. And then what we did was get Cyril Neville, who could sing a lot of these songs and come out and be incredible on stage with us. And so we did figure it out, you know. But we've just kind of thrown out the notion of, well, this record doesn't sound anything like what we sound like live. We've almost embraced that, you know, and use it to our advantage, you know, so that, you know, if you want to hear the record, put on the record. If you want to see the band live and see us elaborate on those things, then come see us live.
let's go a little bit further with that discussion about the live shows. Obviously, you know, folks are very devoted. Anybody who knows anything about the band knows that your following is very devoted. For those who have not been to one of your shows, maybe try to give a snapshot, if you can, of what the live show is like and what the connection is between you and your listeners.
Wow. Well,
in as much as you can do that sitting in a theater in Missoula, Montana without
Yeah, we've been playing music together for a long time, and we're fortunate enough to have Stanton Moore right here, our drummer, who is really one of the best drummers in the business. So, you know, it's always been real high energy show with a lot of improvisation, essentially. And most of it's usually centered around music that we love, a lot of that being New Orleans music, and Stanton being a great drummer from New Orleans understands the rhythms and of the city that, like I was saying earlier, are really unique, you know?
You know, it's we just try to have fun with it, and I think that's contagious, you know? And I think for us, we've just been, you know, we've just enjoyed what we've been doing for so long, and we're just very enthusiastic about it, and I think that's contagious, you know, and people like that.
I always found it fascinating that, you know, we're like a band, we've never had a hit on the radio, and, you know, people aren't coming to hear the song. I mean, maybe somebody's got a song they like, but they're not coming to hear the song that they've been hearing on the radio all day, because, you know, fortunately for us, that's never happened. But, mm-hmm. So I think that it's more like people, they come out for the sort of musical journey that, you know, that we all take together, so to speak, you know.
Now, how do you select tunes by other musicians? I know, like we were talking about before, I'd seen this video of you guys doing Whole Lotta Love. I saw maybe on one of the recordings, kind of an obscure Jimi Hendrix tune, Little Miss Lover, I think. Was that one you guys covered? As well as some other stuff. Like what brings you to a tune to try to take on like that?
Well, for us, I think, you know, something like Whole Lotta Love, I mean, it's overdone, right? I mean,
that's a no-brainer.
It just is. It is overdone, but at sometimes you're just like, well, you know what? It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun for us. It's going to be fun for the audience for 5 minutes out of the night.
Right.
It's overdone. Everybody and their brother has done it. But sometimes, like I said, you just can't take yourself too seriously. You know, it's like, okay, so what? It's going to be fun for us. It's going to be fun for them. Everybody else has done it, but okay, so what? You know? But then other times we're very selective about what we're doing, you know, like whether it's an obscure Alan Toussaint song that we want to do, or, you know, sometimes we're very particular about it, and we don't want to do things that have been overdone too often, you know, we really don't. And there are certain songs that we wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole, even though we love them and we would listen to them every day of our lives, but it's just, you know, that song's been done, and there's just no need to do it for us to do it, you know.
Yes. Some songs are just guilty pleasures of ours.
Some of them are.
Screw it.
Exactly. So that's a good way to put it, a guilty pleasure. So, but then sometimes we are very selective, you know, and then sometimes it's just like, this will be fun, let's do it.
Well, the concept of fun is something that I think is lost on a lot of musicians at times. I'm thinking of an artist friend of mine. I love this quote, and she said it about art, but it could be about music too. She said, you should play with your art as you would any other great friend, you know, have fun with it, enjoy it, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great quote, and I think that that's a lot of why people keep coming back to see us, because, you know, as Ben said, we've been playing music together for a long time. It's going on 15 years now that this lineup has been touring together, and I think that, you know, we've managed to remain friends. Relatively so, but you know, our studio is almost like our clubhouse. You know, I mean, we're all in there. Some of us more than others. You know, Ben's in there every day. I come by, you know, as often as I can. But I am touring with a lot of other projects as well. But it's like our place. You know, it's like, and we always bump into each other there. And you know, hey, what you eating? Let's go eat. Mm-hmm. You need something? I'm going to get something to eat. You know, it's like. We're friends, you know.
Yeah, we actually hang out outside of tour, which is very shocking to me sometimes. But,
yeah.
You know, after 15 years, we actually still hang out. We call each other, what are you doing today?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll wind up going out to see somebody play and, you know, order a drink and you're standing next to Ben. It's like, oh, it's you again? But, you know, New Orleans is a small, it's kind of a small town, really, you know. I mean, it's more of a small town than a big city, you know. And and the community is very close knit, and especially the musical community. You know, if you go to the Maple Leaf, you're going to see Ben Elman. You
know? Well, my girlfriend works there, though. Yeah. That's why you're going to see me there.
So you know, it's kind of that's kind of fun about it too. You know, it's very communal. It's very community like. You know.
We'll be right back.
This is John Floridas. You're listening to Musician Spotlight, and I'm talking today with Stanton Moore and Ben Elman from the band Galactic. GalacticFunk.com is the name of the website, and Galactic is spelled G-A-L-A-C-T-I-C. Funk is F-U-N-K, last I checked, .com. And also, Stanton Moore has his own website, Stanton Moore, M-O-O-R-E.com. Thank you so much for making time to chat with us and talk shop.
Yeah, man.
Thank
you. You're on Musician Spotlight, and hope to talk with you again down the road.
Yep. Thank you very much, man.
You've been listening to an encore broadcast of our 2011 visit with Galactic. We'll be back with more Musicians Spotlight and our 2013 feature with the Dirty Dozen Brass Band. Welcome back to Musicians Spotlight. In this half hour, we'll check back in on our 2013 visit with the Dirty Dozen Brass Band. Hi, this is John Floridas. Welcome to Musician Spotlight. I'm very pleased to welcome Roger Lewis from the Dirty Dozen Brass Band to the program. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Everything's lovely.
Thank you so much for making time to be a guest on our program. I should let listeners know that we are speaking to Roger at one of the small theaters here at the Wilma Theater in Missoula, so we might have a little bit of extemporaneous sounds during the interview. The Dirty Dozen Brass Band, the history of this group goes back to 1977.
Oh, yeah, 1977, 1976, 1977, yeah.
Maybe if you could tell us a little bit about the history and how the group came together. I know some of our listeners will be familiar with this, but...
Well, you know, I don't know if we have enough time to do that, but back in the earlier days, it was the original Sixth Ward Dirty Dozen Brass Band, and that band was just a bunch of guys getting together to entertain a neighborhood, you know, just to have fun. So what happened, they started hiring real musicians in with a lot of social and pleasure clubs that we have around New Orleans. We didn't name ourselves the Dirty Dozen Brass Band. The audience named us the Dirty Dozen Brass Band because actually it was like a social and pleasure club in the beginning. You know, a Six Ward Dirty Dozen was something like a kind of a social and pleasure club kind of a thing. And the band started taking shape from there.
Maybe for non-New Orleans natives, a pleasure club.
Back during the turn of the century, they were called a benevolent society groups.
Okay. All right.
And how that worked, like if you didn't have, black folks couldn't buy insurance, during that time.
That's right.
So these benevolent society group was set up to come to aid you. Like if you needed some money to bury your loved one, they would, you know, give you some money. If you needed some food, they would bring you a basket, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then later on down the line, it evolved into social and pleasure clubs. But they mostly get together and they put on these, what we call second line parades and entertainment for the community. Mm-hmm. You know, they might march from one section of town, from uptown to downtown. You know, there usually be a 4-hour parade, and they might hire maybe 4 or 5 different bands, you know, to play these functions. Well, back in the earlier days, we used to play all the functions, but we used to play a lot of these social and pleasure clubs functions, like the Money Wasters, the Scene Boosters, various, you know, different clubs like that. Musically, our band was set up to play whatever kind of music anyone in the band wanted to play. Like if you was a bebop and you wanted to play some bebop, then hey, yeah, let's play some bop. If you wanted to play R&B, fusion, avant-garde, well, you just name it, whatever. You know, bring it to the table if you had original material to play. Wow, mm-hmm. Let's play that. So I think what made our band different from the other brass bands was our repertoire. Thelonious Monk recordings, we did Duke Ellington, Charlie Parker, John Coltrane, Miles Davis, Jimmy Forrest, you know, Michael Jackson, whatever, you yeah. know. And we brought this music to the streets. Now, bear in mind, traditional New Orleans music is gospel music. Like when the Saints go marching in, just a little while to stay here, then he ramble. Those kind of traditional songs. And we hit the street playing all this contemporary music with that New Orleans beat, not trying to change the tradition of New Orleans music, because we also were playing traditional New Orleans music.
Right.
But we had a fresher approach, just a bunch of guys having a good time, you know, hey man, let's try this, let's play this song on the street. And people loved it. And we picked up the beat a little bit. I mean, people was dancing, man, and you know, like.
To John Coltrane and Thelonious
Monk.
Yeah,
Thelonious Monk, John Coltrane, Charlie Parker, you know, we mixed it all in, you know, and they was loving it, you know, like Blue Monk, we'll be walking down the street playing Blue Monk, and people would slow dragging, yes, you know, and they loved it. I mean, it was something different, something that they didn't hear in the street. You probably would hear that in clubs or whatnot, so we brought it to the streets.
Was that open-mindedness to repertoire, was that something that the band thought out ahead of time, or was it just kind of a natural evolution?
No, it wasn't thought out. I mean, you know, like in a lot of bands, man, you know, you don't get a chance to play some of the music that you want to play. You know what I mean? Like if you're playing, I used to play with Fats Domino. I played with Fats Domino for years. I joined his band in 1971. So if you're in Fats Domino, you're in Fats Domino school.
Mm-hmm.
See, every band you're playing is a different school of music. Then the Dirty Dozen, whatever kind of music you want to play, it gets played. If you have an original composition that you want to play, hey, we're going to work it out. So it's pretty open-minded band, but not... we weren't thinking about changing anything.
Mm-hmm. It just happened naturally.
It just happened. I mean, you know, everybody said, man, y'all changed the music from what it was. Well, we wasn't thinking about that. We were just playing music, having fun. Because when you're a musician, you don't say you want to play this, thus, and so. You don't say, when I started playing music, I didn't say I wanted to be a jazz musician, a rock musician, rhythm and blues musician, country musician. I just said I wanted to be a musician. So I don't care what kind of music I play. I'm open to all kinds of different styles of music, classical, everything. You know, I just hear music, you know. People have a good time. You know, we not only play, we got everything in our music. We got comedy too. And then we like the ladies to come up on the stage and dance with the band. And so you're getting everything. You got, like I say, you're getting 3-for-1. Mind, body, soul, whatever you know. Yeah. So our world's greatest party band, what can I say? I hate to be pulling my own chain. But you know, man, it's a real hip trip, you know.
Well, Roger, speaking of the world's best party band, I would think that the logistics of taking this group on the road. I know you guys play, you're touring a lot. What's life on the road like with the world's best party band?
Man, look, the road is the road. You got to be a soldier. You got to be willing to step on a landmine, throw a hand grenade. It's not an easy lifestyle. If you don't, you know, you have to be able, because you're dealing with a lot of strong personalities, and you living in, like we on a tour bus. You got eight guys on a tour bus, man, you know. All these different personalities. You got to know how to, we have all kind of stuff happening, you know. You know, we like a family. We auger. We curse each other out. It's the, you know, it's music.
Yeah.
You know, it's people have good days, people have bad days. We got one guy in a band, we don't know what he's gonna be from day to day. but all in all, it's a beautiful experience if you can hang. Everybody can't deal with the road.
Right.
With all that traveling, you might get off the airplane, man, gotta go right to the gig. Then after you do the gig, you might have to drive maybe 200 miles somewhere else, and you know, you're sleeping, you don't get no rest. It'd be all kind of ways, you know. It's just the way the road is. Then sometimes, like especially when we go to Colorado, man, like in the winter time, you know, you're in a tour bus, man, you're going to Telluride and you go down this, oh my God, you know, so when we used to travel, when we were traveling in the earlier days, we used to travel in too many vans. We don't had accidents on our highway. We don't total vans. I mean, all kind of stuff be happening, man. So the road is unforgiving, man.
Yeah.
You know, so the road is the road. So you got to be really strong-minded to deal with the road. Everybody can't deal with the road.
Now, what do you do to keep yourself sane and keep yourself healthy and keep going? Because obviously, you're still at it.
I've been playing music, man, since I'll be 70 in October 5th. I'll be 70 years old. And I've been playing music all my life, so... I played music. I was playing music when they didn't have all these super highways, when we was riding six deep in the 57 in the 57 station wagon, all, you know, six deep with the instruments in the back, you know. So don't worry me. I mean, you know, it's just a way of life.
I suppose you have to learn that kind of stuff fast.
Well, you learn that. Yeah. They don't teach that. You can't go to college and get a degree with, you know. You can go to school and learn all the technical stuff about music. You know, what scales go with what chords, and it can be technically right, but that don't mean you're right.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, that don't mean you're right. Then you got to come out on the road and deal with life.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musician Spotlight, and I'm talking today with Roger Lewis from the Dirty Dozen Brass Band. Roger, I wanted to ask you about what was surely one of the band's most adventurous projects, which was What's Going On.
Oh.
Talk about this, because this is not something musicians do every day, is to take on an entire classic album like that and bring it to the band's experience and bring the band to it.
You know, I really love that CD, man. We did one of Marvin Gaye's tunes on one of our other CDs. I can't remember which one it was. So what happened, Shout Record Company, they came up with the idea of doing a Marvin Gaye tribute album. It just so happened Katrina. So, you know, they fitted that in there, like What's Going On. But Marvin did it. It was the Vietnam War that was going on, and people was trying to figure out what's happening, brother, you know. And so, you know, we did the record, but we did it the way Dirty does. And I was really impressed with it because it was a lot of overdubs that we did in the record. And when I heard the final mix, man, it just blew me away. But the Marvin Gaye What's Going On CD, that's my favorite CD.
Let's do something and let's fix the biggest crisis in the history of this country.
Here's a memo. Remember, there's a few wars going on, a couple overseas and on my front lawn, when common sense was common and now it's all gone. What's going on? And that's going on. And what's going on? And that's going on. And what's going on? And that's going on. And that's going on. And that's going on.
Roger, when we were talking about What's Going On, the band's version of the Marvin Gaye album, very much tied into what was going on with Hurricane Katrina. And I know that beyond just as being a member of the band and being a part of the New Orleans culture and city, you were very much affected personally with the hurricane.
Yeah. Well, I had about 10 feet of water in my house. My mother had about 13 feet of water in her house, so it wiped out my whole musical history. I mean, all the pictures and all the stuff that I had, you know what I mean? Hey, we lost everything. We had to start all over again, you know. I happened to be on the road at the time. I think it was in Tennessee somewhere. And we on a tour bus. I'm looking at and watching the news, and I'm looking at a lake where I know they got houses. But you know what tripped me out with that whole, the whole storm thing was my wife. She said, when the big one come, the whole city of New Orleans gonna be on the water. I said, wait a minute. I said, hold it, babe. My wife's Japanese, right? I say, you from Tokyo. You don't know what you're talking about. I say, the whole city of New Orleans is not gonna flood. I said, now the Lower Ninth Ward might flood. Mm-hmm. Because during in 1968, the Lower Ninth Ward flooded because, so say, they blew the levees and all to keep the water from going to the French Quarter. This is hearsay. I don't really know if that's true. You know, and they flooded out the lower part of the city to spare the rest of the city. But in Katrina, all of the levees failed, all the canals, the inner canals, all that stuff failed, you know. And, man, when I was watching that on TV, and I looked at 85% of the city of New Orleans, the first thing I thought about was, what did my wife say? She like spoken into existence. Mm. I said, you don't make no more predictions or
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that was real, man. You know, so that really stuck out in my mind, even today.
Well, hearing you talk about this, you know, firsthand, it really brings to mind just how powerful working on a project like what's going on, how appropriate it was. These weren't just words you were singing of Marvin Gaye. This is something that you were seeing firsthand.
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, and in the playing of it, I mean, it was like the experience of, you know, when a musician play, man, I'm going to use the blues for an example. You can go to school and learn the formula, but you're not really playing the blues until you don't experience some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the more life experiences that you have, whether they're good or bad or whatever they may be, comes out the end of that instrument when you play. You know, I mean, all the experiences that you have had, man, it, whether good or bad or whatever, life experience, when you play, it comes out the bell of that horn. So when we did that Marvin Gaye, man, you know, Cass was feeling different things, but then it all came together as one. You know, and that's what made it, that CD such a great CD, I think. Yeah. DirtyDozenBrass.com is the name of the band's website. People can find out all kinds of stuff there. Oh, yeah.
History of the group.
YouTube,
mm-hmm.
dial in Dirty Dozen Brass Band, and a lot of videos and stuff will come up. You know, you can check us out.
And they can experience three in one, just a little bit by the YouTube.
Mind, body, and soul. You can get the whole package, and you can even check out the Dirty Old Man. He got some other stuff happening with him. All of that. Dirty Old Man like Dirty Dozen Brass Band, you know, because we're a bunch of old men. Well, they're a bunch of old men. I'm still in my 20s. Working on 70.
Roger, thanks so much for making time to be a guest
on
the program.
Yeah, I had a good time, man. Really? I hope you got, you know, something you can use.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. Hope we get a chance to talk shop down the road.
All right. Yeah.
This is John Floridis, and you've been listening to an encore broadcast remix of two programs from the Musicians Spotlight Archives featuring Galactic and the Dirty Dozen Brass Band. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well as through our own website, musicianspotlight.org. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter. Our program is available as a podcast from those websites as well as through iTunes. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.